Okay, as we have our little debate, keep in mind this doesn't count for anything. It's not like one team is going to be the winner. This is just to get the feel of using a debate as an active learning method. So I want to ask one of the groups, I don't care who, just to start out our debate by making a statement supporting your position. Okay? If I don't have a volunteer, I'll just pick somebody. Pick a team. Okay? Either you guys can start or you guys can start. I don't care. All right, guys, why don't you face them?
Okay.
Face them, and you're going to try to convince them why we should study the whole Bible.
Oh, okay. I definitely believe we should always read New Testament and Old Testament, because this is what God told us. And in the book of Revelation, chapter 22, verse 18, it says, "Testify unto every man that hears the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add unto these things, God shall add unto him the facts that are written in this book. And if any man shall take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part out of the book of life." So I don't want to be one of them, so I definitely want to read the Old Testament and New Testament.
Okay, great. That's a really good start. Now, if you guys can somehow respond to what she said as closely as possible, or if you can't, then give a different reason unrelated. Go ahead. All right. Great. So this team made a statement and you guys responded. How about you guys make a statement and then they'll respond to you? Go ahead. Something else that you came up with. Why should we only study the New Testament? Any other reason? I mean, you summed up a lot. Maybe that covers what you guys... Yeah? Okay.
More direct and simple.
Okay. All right, so it's direct and simple. All right, and would you guys try to respond to what she just said?
If you think that Jesus' whole life put on the New Testament, maybe you can back to the Old Testament. They have some prophet just tell us that Jesus will come and will be paid for us. So
okay, great. Okay, so you guys got the feel of it, right? All right, let me ask you something. Did you have to think harder to do kind of a debate?
Yeah.
You have to think harder, don't you, huh?
Because
yeah. You have to be listening carefully to what they said,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to respond to it, and that is active learning.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't get that by just listening. You have to get that by processing it.
And I just want to add one point.
Uh-huh. More involved?
Yeah, more involved.
Why do you think that is?
Because in that age, I think the boys and girls are really against each other.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh, so you're saying boys against the girls?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that age. Not the like in high school.
Okay.
You know.
Well, see, that's a good thing. You have noticed that about your class,
mm-hmm.
and you could use that to have effective teaching. And the rest of us, we should be looking at our class and what do we notice about how they think and how they act and how can we use that to have the best impact. Speaking of processing, which you guys just now did, think about a computer And I can't really draw a computer very well, but we'll just say that we have a computer, and the computer has three steps. There's input. Input happens when you're typing on the keys or when you're putting in a flash drive or something like that. And then there's processing. And that's where it's thinking, it's converting, it's reading whatever you've put in there. And then the last step is output. And the output is what you see on the screen. Output is when you hit print and a page comes out of the printer. So there's three steps. Input, processing, and output. And if we, as children's ministry workers or parents, if we are missing one of those, then it's not a complete thing. A lot of times we only ask for input. Just memorize this. Just read this. Just listen to this. Other times we ask for input and output, which is where they take it in and then they say it right back. But if they've processed it, then they really understand it better. Number six, play a game to illustrate the topic. Playing a game, I mean, it's a good way to explain something, but it's also fun, you know? If we can choose fun methods that the kids enjoy, they're going to be paying attention more. Number seven, discuss the topic with a buzz group. It's about 3 to 4 people. That's why we're doing these group discussions that we did in the first session and we're going to continue to do. It's because when you guys are talking to each other, whatever you say, you're going to remember that the most. Who do you think is going to learn the most from this whole workshop? I am. I'm going to learn this stuff better than any of you because I have prepared this and I am saying it, and so it's going to stick in my head. But that's why I have you guys doing group discussions. Buzz groups is what they're called, so you guys can be thinking and talking out loud. Number eight, asking open-ended questions. Open-ended questions start with why or how. Closed-ended questions start with what or where or who or when. Okay? So let me just think of some closed-ended questions and just try to respond as quickly as you can. Okay? How many disciples did Jesus have? Everybody. How many disciples did Jesus have? How many books are in the Bible? 66. What's the name of the person who first wrote down the Ten Commandments? Or who what's the name of the person who God gave the Ten Commandments to? Moses. Who was the leader of Israel after Moses died?
Joshua.
Okay, those are closed-ended questions. There's one right answer, and it takes about a half a second to say that answer. And there's not much need for discussion. So if you said the right answer, no one else needs to say anything. That's only engaging 20% of the class. But an open-ended question starts with a why or a how and really allows for more discussion. I might say, why did Adam and Eve choose to eat the forbidden fruit even though God told them not to? Why did they choose to? Well, that makes you think a little bit more. Well, the serpent told them, and maybe they believed the serpent, and maybe they wanted to see what it was like. Okay? Why did this happen? Or how did this happen? Forces you to think a little bit more. Next one is invent questions to stump the teacher. Have the kids try to think of questions that stump you. So what I've done is say, okay, you try to ask a question that I can't answer. If I can't answer it, I'll give you a piece of candy. But you have to know the answer. Okay? Now, they might think of really big questions, but they don't know the answer. In that case, it doesn't count. Number 10, do a project that shows the exact opposite of the topic. Okay, so you're talking about the fruit of the Spirit, love and joy and peace and all that, all those fruits of the Spirit. Well, sometimes it gets a little boring to hear the same thing. Here's how you should be all the time. Once in a while, it's more interesting to say, okay, I want you guys to demonstrate the opposite of love or demonstrate the opposite of patience. And then it forces them to pay attention even more. Okay? And then whatever their project they're doing, they're going to illustrate the reason why we have, why the fruit of the Spirit is listed there. They're going to realize why is it important, because they're going to see or experience the opposite. 11 is use or invent hand motions or facial expressions to act out a key verse. Now the thing is, I didn't say just use them. I said they could also invent them. Because if I'm telling you guys what hand motions to do, that's okay. But if you're thinking of it yourself, then you're going to process it more. And then number 12, teach each other certain parts of the lesson. For example, if they get in groups of like three or four people, person A has to teach each other about this part. Person B teaches about this part. Person C teaches about this part. That way, you have a lot of people who are talking and thinking at the same time. And whatever they say, that's what they're going to remember. In fact, look at the quote right below there. The person doing the talking is the person doing the learning. I believe that. I really believe that. And when I'm preparing a lesson or a workshop, I want to have as much time that the students are talking as possible. People learn much better by doing and teaching others than by listening or reading. And I talked about the input-output. I want to show you a picture that was hanging up in my church when I started working there. Rules for good listening. So here is the model student. This is what we want all of our kids to look like. It even tells you exactly what, how he is positioned. Eyes are watching. Ears are listening. So far, that's good. That's input right there. We want them to have input. We want them to be watching whatever we're showing them. We want them to be listening. The next part, lips are closed, which means they're not talking. And if they're not talking, then they're not really able to process what they're learning. Hands are still, which means they're not making anything. They're not building things. They're not touching things. That's going to limit their input, and that's going to limit their processing. Feet are quiet, means they're sitting down the whole time. Means they're not walking around. They're not jumping. You know what? Do you see this kid smiling, right? Do you know why he's smiling? He's smiling because he's not a real kid. This is a cartoon, and you can make a cartoon smile however you want. Most kids I know, if they have to sit like this for an hour or 2 hours, they're going to be bored. They're going to get angry, and they're going to start having other kinds of problems. And so if you are expecting this of them, you're not going to have, you may at best have a quiet class. But a quiet class doesn't necessarily mean they're learning. You want them to be talking to each other about the right things. You want them to be doing things with their hands, making stuff, drawing stuff, maybe touching certain things, or maybe they're doing a team building activity where they have to grab each other's hands for something. Their feet, you want them to be moving around. If they're acting out a scary scene, they could stomp on the floor. If they're acting out a play, then of course they're walking. So when I saw this poster at our church, I took it down. Because I don't want to give this impression. On the back of that page, I want to give you some tips. These are some tips for implementing active learning methods. You could have the greatest method in the world, but if you don't implement it in the right way, it's not going to have the desired effect. And I try to do all of these. So as I read this, you may notice some things I've been doing. First of all, prepare all materials before class and have them readily accessible. When you walked in, the rope was on the floor, the numbers were up on the board. I didn't have to focus on that. If I was still setting it up when you were in here, then you're not engaged for that period of time. Your mind starts to wander and problems could start to happen, especially if you're kids. I've got all my materials ready. I only have the materials that I need. Everything else is in the back of the room. I don't need it. I'm focused. Number two, always start a class with an activity that gets kids doing or talking with each other, because that opens up that communication. If they're not talking or doing something, then they're going to start to wonder. Three, allow them to discover the meaning of the lessons for themselves rather than telling straight to them. That's why at the beginning of the last class, we started with the Psalm 78. I didn't just tell you what it says. I had you guys work together on doing it. Next one we've got is, if the children are old enough to read, let them study the Bible passage. That's kind of what we did. Number five, have them work with one or two partners. We've been doing that. If you ask them to design something, give them as much freedom as possible. Now, this is hard, because if you know what the project is supposed to look like, it's so easy to tell them, okay, here's, you have to use this, you have to do it like this, and you have to do it like this. Sometimes you have to do that. But if you can give them more freedom, it's not only is it more interesting, and not only do you get more variety, but it allows them to think about it more. Because if I guided you through a project one step at a time, do this, you do it, do this, you do it, that's not active learning. That's just passive learning. You're just doing something that doesn't require any thinking. Number seven, get the students started on an activity. While they walk around, while they're working, you as a teacher walk around to check on their progress. Help them if needed. Because if you don't check on them, they might get off track. They start talking about other stuff. You want to walk up and see how they're doing. If they're working on one assignment, then you as the teacher get ready for the next assignment. That way, as soon as it's done, move right on to the next thing. Eight, expect some students to finish activities before others. That's normal. And if you anticipate it, then you can plan something for the early finishers to do. For example, adding more detail to their project, helping another group, or doing something else related to the lesson. Here's a really cool method that I tried one time. I thought this was great. I did this with first graders. They were all working on a project. I don't even know what the project was. But I said, okay, when you're finished, I want you to take your paper, and I want you to walk around and compare your answers with everybody else. And so what they did, rather than just playing around, they're looking, okay, this is what I wrote, this is what she wrote. This is what I wrote, this is what he did. And so they're exposed to that. It worked out pretty well. The point is, you've got to have something in mind for the early finishers. And then number nine, this is kind of a catch-all. Constantly be looking for kids who seem to be disengaged and find ways to get them engaged. Now, there's a lot of ways to do that. There are, you could just stop talking and just wait for them to focus. You could talk to them privately and see, hey, it seems like you're not paying attention. Are you okay? Is there something wrong? You could ask them to volunteer. I mean, there's tons of stuff you could do. Here's what you don't want to do. And I don't think anybody does this. But I'm just saying it anyway. You don't want them all to respond at the same time verbally. You could, but don't expect to hear them all. All right? Let's try this out. I need all six of you at the same time start telling me where you live, what you do, tell me about your family, what do you like to do with your family, okay? Or just tell me about yourself, where you live, where you work, tell me about your family. Ready? Go. All six of you, go. Okay. All right, now am I able to pay attention to all these? No. And if I had a whole class of kids, you know, that just creates a lot of chaos. Now, I might use it sometimes, but usually you want to use methods. If you want them to respond and see how they're involved, here's some ideas. This is a bad example first. Okay, raise your hand if you live in Ohio. Okay, now keep your hand up. Keep your hand up. Raise your hand if you live in Ohio. Keep it up. Now, I asked a yes or no question. Two people raised their hand. The rest of the people, maybe they don't live in Ohio. Or maybe they do, and they're not paying attention. It's possible. It's also possible that the people who raise their hand, maybe they have a totally unrelated question. I need to go to the bathroom. Or what page are we on? So the hand raising doesn't necessarily show you who's engaged. Here are some other examples that do show you who's engaged. Show me with your fingers how many people live at your house. Go. Show me with your fingers how many people live at your house. Look at this. Everybody's engaged. Everybody's answering the question. And it's not chaotic. I can look around and I can see ones, I can see fours, I can see a lot. And then I go from there. If somebody's not raising their hand, I know they're not engaged. Another idea. Give me a thumbs up or thumbs down if you like the following things. Okay? You have to choose yes, I like it, or no, I don't. Different sports. Do you like baseball? Thumbs up or down. Okay? I can see who's engaged. Do you like basketball? Thumbs up or down. Do you like soccer? Up or down. Okay? See, I can see who's engaged, and it gets you thinking, and if you're not, then I can make sure that you're working. And then another example, what we did up here. Walking to the numbers. You could have anything up on the board. You could have numbers, you could have names of people or places, and if every single person has to walk to one, then you know that they're engaged. And you can ask them, oh, okay, why did you choose that answer? That's just an idea. All right. Down at the bottom, this is the only place in the handbook or the workshop handout where I just have blanks. When we're teaching our children, what do we want them to do? So if you were to just see this first blank, we want them to blank their Bible verses. What normally would we put in that blank? We want them to memorize their Bible verses, right? Okay, go ahead and write that on the first line. We want them to memorize their Bible verses. Have you ever had a kid memorize a verse one day and then the next week they don't know it? Have you had that? Okay, so what's better than memorize? We want them to remember it. Promotion? What do you mean promotion? Okay. So that's maybe a strategy to help them remember it, right? So that's a great idea. So the first line should say memorize. Second line, which is better than memorizing, is remember it. For how long do you want them to remember a Bible verse? Think big. How long, ideally, how long should they remember a Bible verse? For their whole life. Sure. I hear people who have memorized whole books of the Bible. And they spend time doing Bible memory every day, but also every day they spend time reviewing what they've already memorized. Okay, good. So that's maybe the next level. They can memorize it, they can remember it, but what if they don't understand it? Have you ever had to memorize something and you don't understand it? Yeah. Well, we need them to understand it, so write that on the next line. That's kind of the next level. Because I can memorize something in Chinese, but I have no idea what it means. Okay, so they understand it. What do you think would be the next level? Better than understanding, they need to, what would you say, huh? Apply it. That's going to be the last one, okay? If you want to write apply, put that on the very bottom blank. But they need to believe it. Because I can memorize something from another religion. I can remember it 2 months later. I can understand what they're saying, but if I don't believe it, then it doesn't do me any good. It's not going to change my life. But ultimately, we want them to be applying what they're learning. And the reason I ask you to do this is because sometimes we don't aim high enough. We are only focused on facts. They need to learn this lesson. Okay? What do you mean learn the lesson? Learn it like memorize it, or learn it like apply it? That's what we're really shooting for. And I just want to challenge all of us to be aiming for that. Last thing I've got on here. In order to have deeper levels of learning, use active learning methods. I know I've already said that. And use them well. That's talking about applying them, or implementing them. But keep in mind that the worst method is the one that you use all the time. Think about the methods we've used in this workshop so far. Think about the one that you like the best. If I did that every single time, it's going to get old. And so you want to have some variety. So the list I've given you on the front, these are 12 different kinds of methods. You could use all of those, but you could also think of your own. And so I'm going to show you a couple of resources, and then I'd like to hear from you guys during our remaining time some of the methods that you have found helpful, either in your personal life. Maybe you went to a class and they did this thing and you remember it really well, or a method that you've seen in your own ministry to children. This book is called Why Nobody Learns Much of... And these are on your resource page, by the way. Why Nobody Learns Much of Anything at Church and How to Fix It. This says that so much of church is focused on the rote memory. R-O-T-E, rote memory. It doesn't normally focus on understanding or believing or applying. This is very helpful for anybody to have a clearer picture of what church education should look like. Most of it is about children's ministry, but also it talks about adults. Let me just give you one example of what's in here. There are three learning structures. You can write this down. You could look at the book if you want. You could have individual learning. You could have competitive learning, one person against another. Or you could have interactive learning, where we work as a team. Okay? This is just an example of what's in the book. Here's another thing. It asks, what strategies do the secular world use in marketing products? What strategies do they use in order to sell their products? And maybe we can borrow some of their strategies. Here's the top three. Know your people. I'll wait for a second. First strategy, know your people. And some of you have already mentioned that. Okay, I've noticed these things about my class, so therefore, here's how I'm going to do my class. Know your people, involve your people, and use visuals. I got that straight out of the book. Okay, and there's other cool stuff in here, too. Here's another thing I've found helpful. Active learning, 101 strategies to teach any subject. This activity we did up on the board, where you came up and stood here, got it out of this book. All kinds of different ways to get them involved. And then here's another resource. This is the other thing that I'm selling. If you want to buy it, it's at a discount here at the conference. Hands-on Bible. This, just the title itself, hands-on, means they're doing stuff. And you could flip to a lot of different pages, and they have activities, kind of like science activities that the kids could do at home. Or you could do it in your classes at church, and it helps them understand it better. You're welcome to look through this.
Do they have the different class, different level of classes?
For this?
Yeah.
No, they only have one level of hands-on Bible.
They have much right?
This, I would recommend this first through sixth grade. I would recommend it. Do you? Okay. Oh, yeah, that's the curriculum. And that's put out by the same company, Group Publishing. And, yeah. Actually, on the worksheets, the homework pages I showed you earlier, a lot of times it has a little picture of this. And it says, hey, look on page 1259 of your hands-on Bible so you can do this certain activity that reinforces the lesson. I think this is really cool. It's got some neat resources in the back, pictures, maps. It's got devotionals that the kids could do. It's intended for kids, but I use it myself when I'm teaching them. I think it's really great. So we've got a couple minutes left, and I wanted to see if you guys could share some methods that you have found helpful in your own life or what you maybe try to do to engage the children. Prizes, okay. Why? Prizes?
Yeah, like, it's made me a little bit surprised because my wife is always getting a folder and give everybody name and give them like a titles. Like, after the week, after the class, just ask the individual kids, do you ask questions in the class, mm-hmm. Grab your hands, or you put up, yes, give you 1 point. And do you help the teacher to clean the table that you did? Oh, yes, pretty good. And did you talking in the class a little bit. You can do better next time. I'll give you one credit or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get some little bit of the price, and every time if they come in, just let them to get it after the class, and you know, and just encourage them to come back next week, and maybe they can get more price.
Cool. Yeah, prizes are good. Can be a good incentive. And can be used really well. Sounds like you guys are really using them well. What else? Other strategies to get them engaged with a certain topic or things that you've remembered?
And our children have one teacher.
Mm-hmm.
When she teaches, it's always very good.
Mm-hmm.
The whole class is good. Because I ask her, and she say the first class, say, when she teaches, she called the kids the rules, just
mm-hmm.
like your wife gave the prize, mm-hmm. gave the point. Yeah, but they call the rule first. The first class, they call the rule.
Yeah.
And everybody know the teacher's rules. So next class, our kids is follow and pretty good. Yeah. And
cool.
Yeah, I like that style.
It's amazing how good kids can do if you make them do it. If you tell them the expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think almost the church is the teacher is the volunteer, and usually they don't know how to teach.
Yeah.
They just waiting to teach, but they don't know how to do it. And
sure.
That's the I think it's our church problem.
Sure. Okay.
Simple three rules, like sister, looking at teacher, don't touch your friend, and zip your mouth, and when you only talk when I ask you a question, and then after you like class close, I'll give you a prize,
mm-hmm.
not prize, give you a stick, and then you get a three stick out of five, I'll give you a prize.
Mm-hmm.
And those little bigger one works, even the big one not always works,
mm-hmm.
not every time.
That's a great idea that that leads into the next session, which is classroom management. And so if you wanted to look ahead before tomorrow, you could see the kinds of things we're going to be talking about tomorrow. Let me give you some examples from my own life. When I was in first grade, second grade, whatever, a long time ago, we were studying the American history of segregation. The black people and the white people are segregated. And the idea was that it would be separate but equal. But really, it wasn't. The white people had better stuff than the black people did. So here's what happened. We all had to wear this bracelet for the whole day. It was green or it was brown. Okay? And for the first half of the day, I wore the green bracelet. And a green bracelet means that you get to play with any of the toys at recess. It means that you get first in line at the lunch. It means you get all these privileges. And the brown bracelet means that you don't get to play with the toys. You have to be last in line. You don't get to do any fun stuff. And then, so we did that for the first half of the day, and then we switch. And we wore the different kind of bracelet. I hated that. Because it really was, it seemed so unfair when I couldn't play with the toys at recess and I had to be in the back of the line. And you know what? I remember that so many years later. That's active learning right there.
Yeah.
Here's another example. When I was in third grade, I'm using examples from a long time ago to show you how much it sticks in your memory. In third grade, we're trying to learn math, a basic addition and subtraction. We're also learning about money. So the teacher had us. We each had our own checking account. It's just a fake checking account. And we got money for doing good things. And we lost money for doing bad things. And at the end of each week, we got to use our money to buy stuff, buy prizes. And we had to write a check and give it to the teacher. And that was active learning. That I had to do it right in order to get that example. Okay? Those are just some examples that I remember. And I would expect that if you use active learning in your class, your kids are going to remember it for a very long time. Okay? Any other thoughts, ideas on strategies you've used?
Do you think that the method I was talking about, does that work?
That's
good or not?
I think that's, it can work. A lot of things can work, and if you do it well, and that's, you're talking about starting with the rules at the beginning?
Yeah.
I was listening to, I listened to podcasts about leadership and children's ministry. One recently was about discipline, and it talked about start with the rules at every class. But for the young kids, they turned it into a rhyme. They made the rules, it's like a poem. And the kids say the poem, and it's a fun way to think about the rules. There's other there's a lot of good strategies that could work.
I think, I don't know, in my view, it might be quite different, but I think that's some advantage from the American style, because you make a rule clear, it's sometimes you make it simple. In my family, my China family, I really make something a little bit fancy. It's not so clear. You see in the which way. If you do well, you get what things. If we give some prize, we give them, even my wife tried to do it, but not so well. It said, if you do very well, you get $1, or you have to do the housework. You do the one, give you $2. But the point is, in my China family, they did not encourage kids to involve the money a lot. But in American style, that's the true life they have to deal with. And I just feel it's a little bit different. Some I don't know yours, but China family, some of them, they don't want to involve money.
That's
cultural conflict.
Sure.
I started to realize that it is work, because that's human nature. Human nature. I mean, kids like Christ seem like when I work hard, I want to get reward or something.
Right.
So it starts from kids. It's right.
That
might be the right way to do it.
Yep. Let me leave you with one more active learning method I've seen work well with different ages of kids mixed together. This is called buddy reading. If you have older kids and younger kids, like third graders and preschoolers. If the preschoolers can't read, but they like to have books read to them, and the third graders can read, well, you put them together. One third grader and one preschooler together. The third grader reads the book to the preschooler, and the preschooler looks at the picture. Not only are they both engaged, it's also teaching interpersonal skills. I've seen that work really well. Again, a lot of methods can work well if they're implemented right. And if it's not, if you think you have a great method and it's just not working, try to figure out why is it not working. Maybe I didn't explain it right. Maybe there's too many kids. Whatever the problem is, figure it out and then try to adjust it. We are done. Thank you so much for your contributions, and I'll be here to answer questions if you have any more. Thanks.